Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
J. Cross.
Hi, Mark Packham.
Who is your favourite animated character, and why is it Lyra from The Eternal Descent?
Because Lyra from The Eternal Descent had maybe the best and most well thought out backstory for any character of all time that was then used on a pedal.
If you're not sure what we're talking about, this week's Patreon episode will be...
Do you
think
I pulled that off?
Yeah, I think you did well.
Okay, cool.
This week's Patreon episode will be a good place to start. We are talking about the weirdest / worst signature products of all time.
It started as weirdest. It started as worst, but I think it ended as weirdest.
And I guess the Lyra's not even a signature pedal. It's a product made up to accompany a cartoon about a fake band that no one watched. If you want to hear more about that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
And Jay Cross.
Hello.
It's really, 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 really hot.
It's quite hot.
It would explain two things. If we're a little bit lethargic, that is one thing that would explain. Secondly, if you can hear a bit of a fan noise in the background, it's because Matt Knight has got a fan on, because in London it's
31 degrees in my flat at the moment.
It's even hotter than it is here, and it is absolutely baking here.
The pollution just, you know, helps create this nice rank vibe.
that's how I think of London. Even on its best days, it's got a bit of a rank vibe.
Actually, just putting it out there, I went for a 10-mile run this morning, so, you know, just before it got too hot, and, you know, there's some nice views out there, some parks and that. It's just...
I don't believe it.
So on Friday night, I finished work a little bit late because I had a conference call with a bunch of different people around the world. There was like 15 people on this call.
I
was told, you know, the phone call starts late, so go home and do the call from home rather than do it in the office.
Yeah.
So I was here, sat exactly where we are sat right now, but I had the door open, really nice, like little breeze coming in, really lovely. And about halfway through the call, my boss just went, is someone on a boat? Is someone doing this call from their boat? And everyone sort of stopped. And he went, I'm sure I can hear a seagull. What's going on? And I just said, oh, sorry, that's me. Bear in mind, this is the first time I've had... This is a regular call that happens. First time I've ever been involved.
This is a big head honcho American...
Kind of, yeah.
Person.
And he was like, what's going on? I live right by the beach. And he went, oh, no, it's just nice to know that you've got the dedication to call in at 7 p.m. on a Friday night. So don't worry about it. But I did close the door afterwards. So that's why the door isn't open now.
Because of the seagulls. To be honest, I'm not sure our listeners would mind hearing a little bit of ambiance. But
a little bit of Brighton ambiance.
Let's roll with it. It is unbelievably beautiful in Brighton today. But as always, there is the scourge, the seagulls. There is a lot of seagulls. Looking out your window, there's a lot of seagulls up there.
It's because we live by the sea.
And also you live sort of right near that thing that is like a big bin over the road or whatever it is. A cement factory.
There's a cement factory there, yes.
So there's probably stuff for them to dive into and eat.
What, cement?
Yeah, they love a bit of cement, the seagulls. They love it.
That's evolution for you, baby.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. All the food's been eaten. They're onto the hard stuff. Manite, how's your week been?
It's very good, actually. I had a mystery package turn up, which...
Always exciting.
Yeah, it was a bit of confusion. There were some custom charges to pay. Didn't get a notification from Doddle. Turned out they'd also emailed a Matt Knight at BN1. Like, there's a
weird
package for you. I was like, that is weird.
When you said when you said BN1, do you mean the postcode BN1 or someone at BN1 magazine?
No, the postcode BN1.
Oh, right, weird.
Yeah, so I was a bit like, oh, and then I was like, oh, maybe I had like a Doddle account in Brighton, maybe. And they were like, no, it's for a Matthew James Knight. And I went, strange. Got to the bottom of it though, so that's fine. And got these wonderful packages.
What was what was in the box?
I got two packages this week. I got the Walrus Audio Luminary back, because it was a bit poorly, so he sent it back. And I've been playing it today and realised we really didn't do it enough justice, I think, when we did the video. Because, as we said before, I never really had much time to kind of demo the pedals before we kind of did the videos before. And the way we were kind of monitoring it, I don't think I gave it a fair kind of view. Okay. And now I've played it, I'm like, it's not supposed to be like a micro pog. It's not supposed to be like a Boss Octave. It's its own thing. It's basically like an organ simulator pedal, a bit like the Electro-Harmonix one.
Yeah.
But it just like, I've been plugging it in today. I was like, wow, it does so many things I just didn't realise. And I just think we maybe rushed it slightly when we did the video. So I was talking to Joe about maybe redoing that video with some other octave pedals.
Yep.
And doing kind of like an octave pedal shootout. And then the other package was a complete surprise because the company didn't actually tell me they were sending anything.
Oh,
and they just happened to turn up.
Well, how did they get the address?
I'd sent them the address and said, oh, I'd love to do some stuff. And this was, I checked today, 7 weeks ago.
Right.
And they went, yeah, we'll put you in touch with the guy that kind of sorts all this stuff out. And I went, oh, yeah, you know, we'd love to do some things. Like, here's the address. Didn't hear anything after 3 weeks. Emailed them again. Still didn't hear anything. And then, lo and behold, this package turns up on Friday.
Nice. So what was it that we got?
So we got two pedals from Petty John Electronics in Oregon, and they are built like absolute tanks, like total like military kind of style, like pressed sheet metal kind of design. And they are absolutely incredible. Like from the moment I plugged the first one in, I went, you know when you like plug a pedal in, you go, I just want to put that on my pedal board now and never ever touch it again. Like just, the settings it had on the box straight away were just like nailed it.
The only one of the pedals I've heard is it's like an always on pedal, like I can't remember what it was called now, but yeah, similar thing. Like it looked almost like steampunky.
Yeah, yeah. They've got these massive LEDs on them, just like really, really solid pedals, really weighty.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like.
They look like it.
Yeah, so I think the one you might be talking about is the Lift, which is the first one they sent us. And talking, as we always talk about make gooder pedals, this is up there with one of the best because it is always on.
Right.
Like it's a buffer and boost.
Yeah.
But when you plug it in, it's always on. The buffer is always on. And then there's an input control that basically just dials how much kind of touch of gain you want to add to the input signal. If you turn it all the way down, it's just a great buffer. As soon as I plugged it in, everything just sounded better.
Can you actually never turn it off then?
No, the buffer with the input signal is just always on.
Right, okay.
But then you hit the foot switch and there's a boost. And then you've also got the option of a high cut and low cut, which can be selectable when you hit the boost on or also always on. So it's kind of like a buffer and EQ. So you can kind of tailor how much high cut or low cut you want, and then you can decide whether you want that foot switchable or not, along with an additional boost.
Wow.
So it's
okay.
Just brilliant to leave on all the time.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And then you've just got a boost on there as well. And then the other one was a pedal that I think we talked about in the podcast quite a few weeks ago, which is the Petty Drive version 2, which is two pedals of theirs in one, the Iron and the Chime, which has also got, the first thing is I was noticed, I was like, oh, it's got some extra input jacks on the back, and it's got an insert loop. So I was like, oh, you can, cool, you can run a delay with it, or, you know, whatever. But then I realized that it's actually an insert loop between the two pedals, not like an effects loop, as it were, that sits directly after it.
So you can slot something in between the two effects.
In between the two pedals.
Okay.
But then what they also suggest is, well, what you can do is then run it in a switcher unit and then separate the two units completely. So in something like, so I went, oh, okay, well, if I put it in the ESA, I can then swap the order around as well.
So
you basically
separate
right.
the so two
it's,
pedals.
It's basically two pedals in one box that, as standard, run from, I don't know, right
one
to left
to
or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can break them out if you're using switches.
Yes, yeah, so you can break that out, or you can add another pedal in. So say, for example, you've got a particular phaser that sounds really good after the one drive but really good before another, you can just pop that in the middle. But it's nice. The chime, which is the kind of the right side, is a sort of really low gain boost. So it's more like a low gain overdrive with an additional boost that's non-foot switchable. You can just dial in a second gain stage. Three options of like EQ low cut, and then three options of clipping.
Okay.
So really similar to the Roadrunner overdrive from Echoline.
Yep.
And then the second one is the Iron, which is their more saturated sort of tube screamery kind of. Well, it runs on a JRC chip, which is the same type of chip in the Tube Screamer, where you've got a mix control which adds in parallel your clean signal. So if you just want to cut through a little bit more, you can basically dial in some more of your clean signal. And then, yeah, they work really well independently. They work really well together. And then, obviously, once I put it in the switcher, I can put, like, one at the beginning of the chain and one at the end and then run stuff in between. So it's just a really, really versatile little pedal. But straight away, you know, just they felt great out of the box, nice and weighty, good design. And then just a great sound. You know, sometimes when you have to fiddle around with a pedal for ages and then you get a bit like disheartened with it because you're like, I'm not so sure. And then kind of A-B'd it with a load of stuff and was like, oh, this is just awesome. Just absolutely awesome. So really, really looking forward to demoing those on the channel. And I think probably what we'll do is, rather than doing individual videos for each one, I think we'll do like an overall video with both together.
Okay, like a sort of introduction to Petty John effects.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is nice to do the kind of pedal of the week, but I think we're trying to add in maybe a few more other pedals to kind of A-B it with stuff and
I think
do
that's,
a slightly longer video.
I think that's the way to go, isn't it? There's we can do comparison videos.
You know,
and
I was
stuff.
Looking, there's loads of other videos out there of people doing some of their other pedals, not these. Part of the reason I said maybe you should send those two was because there wasn't too many videos on those.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll kind of, you know, be able to show the world what they can do. But yeah, straight away I was like, awesome.
Looking forward to it, definitely. If you can hear ice clinking, by the way, on the podcast, it's because Jay served up one of the weirdest drinks I think I've ever experienced.
It's not that weird.
It's like a coffee lemonade.
Yeah.
Why don't you just make an iced coffee?
This is something that I bought in this won't mean much to people outside the UK, but something I bought in Marks and Spencer today.
I think people know what that is.
Okay. No, there's no plug in here, just
okay.
So as you're aware, I did pay for this.
Okay, good.
It's called Coffee Spritzer or something.
It's very
weird. It's like a kind of a fruity coffee drink, but it's really hot in here, so we needed to drink something with ice.
It's really hot. Already 10 minutes into the podcast, I'm feeling it.
I thought you were talking about me because I'm drinking the gin and tonic.
Oh, no. Beautiful. Some of us have got to drive someone else home after this.
You're going into town anyway. Jay Cross, how's your week been? Have you done any guitar-related things? Have you been to any shows, seen any good guitars this week?
This week's been really good, actually. Very busy. I put on a gig on Wednesday night. And it was my friend's band from Long Island called Iron Sheik.
Yep.
And we've put on a few times. Really good. Show was sold out. It was only a small venue, but really cool. Just, you know, tellies into Marshalls in a small venue, 4x12s. It sounded fantastic.
There is still, as much as we talk about on this podcast, like, just get a smaller amp and turn it up. There is still something about being in a very small venue when someone's got 4x12s.
There was, yeah, so two Marshall JCMs, with 2 4x12s. It really did sound fantastic. Like the lead guitar player was using a Tele with single coils. The rhythm guitar player was using a Tele with humbuckers.
Yeah,
it just sounded great. Like, yeah, it just sounded really, really good.
It is the classic punk rock setup, isn't it? Like, yeah. Teles into JCMs.
Yeah.
Preferably DSL-50s.
Yeah.
That is a winner.
It was great. Yeah, that was really cool. In a venue that I've not done a show in before. So that was a bit of a... It's always a bit weird because you never know how it's going to sound out front. You know, irrespective of the gear that the bands are using. And usually with punk bands, it is bad.
Well... I don't think that's necessarily true.
Well, quite often.
I think the sort of punk bands that you put on actually have pretty good gear.
Yeah, usually. I guess they're sort of quasi pros.
Yeah.
But you know, it can be bad. But the sound engineer was a friend of mine and he knew how to make the room sound good. So yeah, it was awesome. Good. It was good. So it was cool. I went into GAC this week.
Okay.
Went into GAC to see the gang in there. And they've got the John Mayer in there.
So this is the John Mayer we talked about last week.
The John Mayer we talked about last week.
£11,000.
Yes.
Is that right? £11,000?
Yeah, I think it was £10,995.
Okay.
I think.
What was the verdict? How many did you buy?
I left it. I thought it would... Maybe someone else should take it.
Someone a little bit less privileged than yourself.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
someone
right.
who hasn't got that GN money.
Completely, completely. It certainly is a looker.
That sounds like you're not that enthused, because I looked at pictures and actually I thought it looked quite good.
I tell you what, I mean the pictures I thought were very... I mean, it just had so much going on. Actually, when you saw it in real life, it was maybe not quite as full on as the picture suggested. Probably because I'm more into guitars that don't have extreme flames, and I think probably the one that was on display maybe wasn't quite as fruity as the one that they chose, because inevitably the one that they chose for the picture is going to be the one with the most flame on it, because that's what a lot of these people, a lot of people who are into these guitars are into. So, you know, I understand. So actually it was, you know, but I saw some other cool stuff. There was, yeah, they've got some cool stuff in there, knocked about for that, and then went to the beach. Because it's been really nice this weekend.
There was plenty of guitar players down the beach, I'd imagine, this weekend.
Oh, not where we were. We were over in the Hove end.
Go to the nice bit.
Completely.
I actually saw a slightly more expensive guitar than that yesterday.
How could you have done so, Matty?
I saw I forget his name, the bronze custom shop Strat that they did recently.
Coltrane.
Robbie Robertson.
Robbie Robertson, that's it, yeah. $13,995. And that guitar looks amazing.
Yeah, that is a good looking guitar.
I was like, ah. And it was like cold to the touch, where it's like been bronzed. I was like, ah, this guitar looks awesome. I touched it anyway.
I know
the people in there. They know me.
Where were you?
It was in Guitar Camden.
Right, okay.
Which is mainly a high-end store. More than anything, they do some sort of medium price stuff and they do some of the cheaper Fenders, but it's mainly like high end stuff, being in central London. But that guitar was, and then it was sitting next to a Greg Fessler Masterbuilt 64 Strat in gold sparkle, which was the Masterbuilt equivalent of the gold custom shop Strat that I used to own.
Yeah, of course.
So I was like, that pair together was like over 20 grand. I was like, oh man, imagine going in there and just being like, yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand how that works. I can't imagine ever having that much money on hand to be like, yeah, get a guitar, no problem, 13 grand.
I mean, you'd have to buy that in cash, wouldn't you, if you had that sort of money?
Yeah, you're not buying that on finance. Come on, you're just big old wad of cash down on the desk.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I did a couple of things this week. Firstly, new video up on the Guitar Nerds channel. It's been a little bit quiet on the YouTube channel. I've been waiting for Joe Branton to reemerge from his studio
hibernation
quagmire that he's in at the moment to actually put up some pedal demo videos. So I thought I'd step in, take the reins back on the channel, and uploaded the top 8 Gibson SG facts you probably didn't know. Top 8 because there wasn't enough interesting ones for a top 10, and top 5 is not enough on the old the facts videos. So top 8. So that video's up on the channel now. There are actually some things in there that I did not know about the SG and I think are actually quite surprising.
Did you know that it wasn't introduced until a bit later than the Les Paul? Did you know that?
That's right.
Did you say that?
I didn't say that. Kind of figured that people already knew. I do reference, because we talk about the SG a lot in the Les Paul video.
Yes, okay, yes, fair enough.
Which makes sense, obviously, because of the
easy cop-out
transition
there
between the two. So I did mention that, but there's some other interesting things. I'm not going to spoil them now.
I'm excited to hear them.
YouTube.com/guitar nerds videos.
What's the full URL?
I don't know. It'll be like watch-YYZX TBT14. Something like that. Don't do that. That might be something horrendous. That might be some of this like these awful videos that people, grown ups, are always talking about being on the internet that you shouldn't watch. But yeah, go and check it out on the YouTube channel. The other thing that is vaguely interesting, I guess, is I got a package as well towards the end of this week, Wednesday, something like that, from Daddario, who have a new chromatic pedal tuner out, which I put a picture up over on the Instagram page at Guitar Nerds, which looks really cool. I plugged it in for about 5-10 minutes, tuned a guitar with it. To be honest,
What were you tuning?
What do you mean?
5-10 minutes?
Well, you know, I was just messing around with it. But to be honest, I couldn't really do much more than that because the feature set is very limited. As far as I could tell, I've not actually looked into it. The only controls on the box or on the pedal itself are on and off and like pitch. So like, you know, going up and down. I think it does 20 or 30 cents either side of 440. But what
does it go down to 432? Does it go down to that god tone?
I think it might. I think it might
do. That frequency range.
Yeah, I think it might do. But what I do like about it is the display is very, very good. Probably the brightest of any pedal tuner display that I've seen. I mean, you know how loyal I am to the TU3. I love the TU3. This has got a bigger display and it's a bit brighter.
It's not polyphonic, is it?
No, it's not. It's mono. What I don't think it will have, I think the tuning's very good. They talk about 32-bit tuning and stuff like that. It doesn't give you a huge amount of visual indicators on how far
in or out you are.
Right. It's not like a TU3 that's got, you know, you can kind of all within the note that you're tuning to, it's got quite a wide range of whether you're in or out of tune. But I think, you know, if you're going for something like this, really, it's for a kind of pedal board space saving because it's very, very slim. Slightly bigger than the Polytune Mini, but a much better display than the Polytune Mini. If kind of real estate is your big concern, it's definitely worth checking out. But I guess I'll do a full review maybe for YouTube. I don't know. Maybe Instagram. How long does a video need to be for a pedal tuner demo? Don't think it probably needs to be full YouTube length, does it? But
I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah, we can do something with it. Definitely, I'll take some photos and stuff like that. But yeah, it's cool. Nice little neat thing. Daddario, obviously, they seem to have like fully incorporated Planet Waves now. I'm not sure whether they've completely phased the name out, but like stuff that would normally or would have come out under the Planet Waves banner seems to now just come out as Daddario. Like,
but this tuner wouldn't have. Would you have?
Well, I guess just all accessories that weren't strings would have been Planet Waves at one time, but now it all just seems to be Daddario. So, interesting. And like I said, I'll do a bit more of a detailed rundown, probably on Instagram, something like that. Shall we dive headfirst into a big old barrel of
news?
We should mention Branton probably will be back next week to take over the news duties. But I don't know.
It's been 3 weeks now, isn't it?
It has been 3 weeks without him, the Bantonite. The Bantonites are getting angry at us.
Should see Bo Banton on Instagram. I mean, the guy's obviously getting a bit angry, whoever does Bo Banton, because I think the pitches are getting slightly harsh.
He's desperate for Banton to be back.
I reckon... the majority of the time that I open Instagram, the first picture is that Bo Banton picture.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't understand why.
Well, because so the timeline, as far as I'm aware, is not chronological.
No, it's
curated. Yeah. I have exactly the same thing. Why, when every time I open Instagram, is Joe's Bo Banton face
so regularly?
It's always the first one.
And I've stopped liking it.
Yeah, I don't like it. Yeah,
like
yeah.
the other ones sometimes.
Yeah. If they're good, if it's a good one, like yeah. that one where he was in the studio and he had a really fat face, that one yeah. was fantastic. Well done. But
it's usually just that same one of his face comes up more often than not when I open Instagram. I just don't understand why.
It's usually the first thing I see in the morning.
Yeah,
it's
well,
not
completely.
Like, not like some beautiful birds outside or like my girlfriend's face. She's usually up and in the shower already. So I get my phone. I think, oh, I'll have a little look at Instagram, see what the day holds for me. You know, see what people have been up to last night. Check it. Bo Banton's face, first thing every morning.
Awful.
Indeed,
awful.
Indeed. Let's talk. We've got some breaking news from our resident Fender correspondent, James Cross. What we got?
So this week, it's FSR.
Yep.
So, you know, this is an ongoing...
Stands for Factory Special Run.
Yep. A new load of guitars in Silverburst. HSS Strat, Jazzmaster, and Twin Humbucker Tele. Normally, I'm not a huge fan of Silverburst. I've said this before. I'll say it again. The Jazzmaster, however, I think looks absolutely fantastic. It's got the big cream... and I think it's good that they've gone with cream pickups rather than... I think it would have been too easy to go with black pickups to match the rest of the aesthetic of that guitar.
Yeah, that I think that would
and
have
I think
it
would have been
really
a bit
bad.
Too metal.
Yeah.
But I think having those cream pickups really offsets it. But the thing that's really interesting about this is it's ebony boards.
Ah.
So I think it's the first time that we've seen an ebony board on a Fender, except maybe Jim Root.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything else... Couldn't think of anything else.
Yes, there has been other things. Those Korean-made FMT tellies had an ebony board.
Did they?
I believe some of them did.
Don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I believe some of them did. I think they were mahogany and ebony.
The ebony board, that's now going to be standard, right? That's what we were saying the other week.
No, on the Elite series.
On the Elites.
On the Elites.
Yeah, but yeah. Hasn't happened just yet by the looks of things.
No, but it, you know, what it does seem to suggest is that we are we are starting to see this transition from Rosewood that has been talked about over the last, you know, weeks and months or whatever. There's been a big, you know, a load of information going out about how the Palferro wood is going to be replacing a lot of the fingerboards on the Mexican series, and ebony is going to be replacing them on the Elites. So it's really cool to see that transition.
Is it Elites or is it Professionals?
I should know this.
You should know this. This is going to be very embarrassing. I hope someone from Fender is listening. For once, I hope someone from Fender is listening. and then you get sacked.
Thanks very much.
Funny.
Thanks.
You do that research. Me and Matt will talk about some other
Elites.
Other
Elites
products.
Is the reason that it's confused me is that these guitars are American Pros.
Yes,
but they've got ebony boards.
Yes,
but moving forward, it will be the Elites that have ebony boards as standard.
And what's
the Pros will be Rose? Will continue to be Rosewood.
Right. Gotcha.
And so then that's Mexican. Sorry, that spun me out for a sec.
Okay,
that's what the deal is.
You are easily confused.
Well, completely. Yeah. But I think they look really cool. That Jazzmaster, especially, I think is a right winner.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks good. I'm quite a fan of Silverburst, but I kind of think the allure of Silverburst was that it hadn't been used for a long time. You know, it's kind of with Antigua as well, and you know, Gibson started doing some silvery burst stuff in I think the 70s. And then you didn't see it for a while, and now it's just like, okay, well, we've done all the normal colours, should we just do Silverburst? So you see Silverburst on everything now, and I'm kind of not that fussed by it anymore.
Mm.
But it's a cool colour. You know,
yeah.
It's good. It's good.
No, I don't think it is in general, but I think it looks good on that Jazzmaster.
Right.
The others are cool as well, and I think they're going to be really popular, but that Jazzmaster, I think, specifically looks...
Yeah, that one does definitely look the best. Interesting. I want to see what other FSR things happen soon. I think there's with the FSR it's fun because you kind of never know, like you always know with the standards or what they're now calling professional, it's like there's going to be a red of some sort, there's going to be a sunburst, there's going to be black, there might be a natural, but probably not, because that's the one people want to buy on tellies. So that probably will put that in the more expensive one. So yeah, keen to see what new FSR stuff 2017 holds.
FSR stuff is wicked.
Yeah, always good, always good. What else looks wicked is something that I'd never heard of before until I saw this press release. Dream Studio Guitars have released the Maverick 2 Alan Johannes signature model, and Matt Knight has got the details.
I have, yes. Yeah, not a company. I mean, I think this is the thing. We always find out about these guitars that are maybe bigger in America, or yeah, there's a lot of, obviously, boutique builders that maybe don't make their way over here. And they actually make a range of really, really cool, like, odd-looking guitars, but actually, look, some of them look really cool. They do one called the Maverick, which looks really nice. So, yeah, check them out on dreamstudioguitars.com if you want to follow along while we're talking about it. But the Alan Johannes signature, which they're saying is sold out already. I was like, oh, okay. Maybe it's not actually out yet. And then I looked at the picture first and went, and then looked at the name and thought, boutique, it's probably going to be expensive. $12,995.
Yeah, I was looking at that. All their stuff, like, is really affordable, but are they building it in the States?
I don't know. I reckon it's maybe, I mean, I can't say because I can't see anywhere on their website, but maybe it's a Reverend sort of setup.
But maybe if they're saying they're sold out, though, because you've got to, if you're doing that, you know, if you're going to build them in Korea or Indonesia or something, I'd imagine you've got to do quite a big run. And I can't imagine that there's that much demand for the Alan Johannes signature model.
They've got some photos from the... they've got photos from their, what looks like their workshop currently. So maybe not. I mean, they're just really, really affordable. And I mean, basically what we're looking at here is a semi-hollow Jazzmaster?
Yeah, kind of.
No, Jaguar.
Kind of, yeah.
No, I was confused.
Well, it's humbuckers, isn't it? So it's kind of neither.
I was thinking of the switching, because you've got the 2 3-way micro switches on the upper part, then you've got the 3-way selector on the lower part with the volume and tone, offset style trim, really nice inlays as well, but the f-holes are like non-traditional, kind of that what you'd expect.
Yeah,
but I mean, just a great looking guitar. Chambered alder with an alder cap, maple neck, you've got 25.5-inch scale, rosewood fretboard. So everything you kind of maybe expect from like a Fender style guitar. Seymour Duncan SH55s in there, 500K pots, coil taps. So what looks like a really, really versatile guitar. And the guy has played with loads of artists. I think he did stuff with Queens of the Stone Age. A load of artists that they've been involved with, like them Crooked Vultures.
Yeah, I was just doing a bit of reading on him. He's been in a lot of bands.
Yeah, when I first saw a picture of him, I was like, because he said it, like, he's a multi-instrumentalist, which normally means I'm probably not going to like the music.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably going to be kind of, I don't know, probably a little bit not poppy enough for my taste. But actually, because, I mean, you look at the list of the instruments he plays. So they've got, Wikipedia's got listed vocals, guitar, drums, bass, mandolin, banjo, lap steel guitar, keyboard, tabla, something
Mandigam.
I don't know.
Mandigam?
Yeah. Santor, theremin, flute, clarinet, soprano saxophone, marxophone, and fiddle. Normally, someone with that kind of list of instruments played, I'm like, man, this is going to be too out there for me. But actually,
he's been in Queens of the Stone Age. He was in Spinneret, which is that band that Brody Dahl did.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
After the Distillers, he was in Them Crooked Vultures. He did that thing with Dave Grohl, that Sound City Players thing. So yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. He also, the band, I was just reading on here, the band that he started when he was a kid was a band that Flea was in before Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Okay.
I mean, I think Flea was in a lot of bands back, you know, in when he was a teenager.
But, yeah, yeah.
Cause he was in Fear as well, wasn't he? But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, loads of stuff. But I don't think I've ever heard of him before.
No, I haven't. Just looking at their website as well, at the other guitars they make. So they make one called, is it the Twang? Is that that Tele-style one? The Twang looks incredible. It's like a modern twist on a Tele, I guess. So somewhere, I guess it, you could say it's got some of that kind of Ormsby shape to it, that modern, you know,
that sort of
kind
offset of type.
Yeah, off the kind of very kind of common look for kind of custom guitars these days. But it's a Tele, basically. $1,199.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
It, you know, if it's made in the States, it looks fantastic. And they do some other weirder stuff. Like, we're looking at the original Maverick here, which is like fully solid body with four tone controls or something?
Well, there's three pickups, so I assume it's a volume for each and a tone. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Matt, these must be made in the States because they're only saying like three available of each colour.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine they're like in a production line from somewhere else.
But at the same time, if they were built in the States, it would probably say...
Maybe, yeah, it does seem weird. Joe, while we're talking, why don't you have a look at their, like, is there an about the...
I am just looking at their other models. They do one here, which I think is the signature guitar for someone who actually works for the company.
Okay.
But it's like an offset Tele with one, like, active pickup in the bridge in, like, a matte black. And it sort of looks a bit like a slightly melted Jim Root.
Yeah.
But they also do it in like a Sherwood green or like a metallic green with the black pickguard. They just look really good. They just look incredible value for money.
Yeah. I think we need to investigate this more. Maybe it's someone to hook up with for an interview, Matt.
I mean, yeah, I might get in touch with them. I mean, their basses, they do a bass called The Dream.
Yeah.
Which they've actually done in purple flake, which is one of the greatest colours ever. Which looks great. They look like just really, really modern basses. I don't know where you can buy them. But just quickly going back to the Sparkle, they are shipping or starting production late July, so you have to put in an order now.
Wait, so this is the Maverick 2, right? This is the Alan Johannes
signature. I think they actually call it... let's have a look. Yeah, where did I go? Yeah, so the actual name they've given it in terms of a name is the Sparkler.
Right, okay.
But yeah, so I think they've all got Studio, El Diablo, Studio Classic, Voodoo, Sparkler, Nightmare, Riverboat, Blues.
We're actually just looking at the Jupiter Blues, and that is
the one I just clicked on. Is the one of the weirdest guitars I've ever seen.
Yeah, definitely do check this out.
So it looks like someone's punched a hole for a 335.
Yeah, someone's just, or like someone's dropped something on a 335, and it's kind of there's a bit of it left. DreamStudioGuitars.com, definitely worth investigating. I've never heard of them before.
Very weird.
This kind of popped up in the news feed and is definitely worth looking at. We'll do some more digging. Maybe we'll try and get an interview with the team behind those guitars. Jay Cross, do you want to tell us about the Electro-Harmonix Tone Corset Compressor?
Yeah, I mean, so I was doing a little bit of reading on this because I saw it got announced in the week, and I was so put off by the graphics and the name that moved away from it. But I did a little bit of reading on it today, and on Reddit someone else is saying, you know, highlighting the art and everything, and it just seems I kind of feel like maybe there are two different people who are in charge of designing graphics and names for Electro Harmonix pedals.
Maybe, yeah.
And depending on who's in on the day that the pedals are finished, that's who gets to name and design it.
Yeah.
Because someone else, as I say, someone on Reddit pointed out that for every bass clone or 360 looper, there's a Canyon or a Blurst.
The Blurst is too much.
And, you know, it's so funny because you see something like the Epitome or the Tone Tattoo that just looks completely bananas. And then the next week, they'll bring out the Soul Food, which looks really classy. I don't understand what's going on with Electro Harmonix. It's just everything seems to be all over the place.
One of the comments on Reddit is, I feel like the EHX branding guys collectively had a stroke right around the time the Blurst came out. it's a bit weird in terms of the name and the design, but
in terms of the functionality, it actually looks really nice and it's very cheap. Well, you know, relatively cheap for an analog compressor. So it's you've got a blend function, which is always really nice and not something that this appears to be getting a bit more popular. The blend function, because there's no blend function on the CS3, is there, Matt? It's just it's on or it's off.
Yeah.
So that's nice. You know, that's nice to be able to be able to blend it in. Another thing that they've done there is they've got a mini switch there that's a pad control.
Yeah.
Now, from what I understand, in the video, when the pad goes on, it just goes a bit quieter, which seems a bit weird, but it's designed to be used for people who are using active pickups.
Yeah.
So where the signal is going in a little bit hotter than you would expect from a passive guitar signal, the pad there just brings the volume down just a hair, which again I think is really nice. And that's a whole area where people, I think specifically bass players, I've not heard this demoed with a bass, but I think specifically bass players, you know, active pickups are such a large part of modern bass playing that this is designed almost specifically for those sorts of people. I'd be really interested to hear Joe's take on this, because, I mean, obviously, I don't really care for compressors.
It is weird, though, that they did like a bass compressor very recently.
Well, so completely.
To put that feature in with bass, I think it's probably more that, you know, people with active guitar pickups don't want to be clipping the front end of a compressor.
Sure, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
There's just such a ridiculously wide range of Electro Harmonix pedals now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's just so much stuff. I'm like, there must just be a lot of crossover, surely.
Well, I do, particularly on compressors and stuff, like it, because they can be used for guitar and bass, obviously they'll be voiced differently and things like that, but yeah, it's just, there's so much stuff out there from Electro Harmonix.
10 pedals they class as compression or sustain pedals.
Give us the full rundown.
Bass Metaphors, which is more of a preamp, but it has got a compressor in it.
Yep.
Bass Preacher, the Black Finger, which is their valve-driven one.
Can't
the
believe
freeze.
They're still doing that.
Yeah,
they,
yeah.
They count the freeze as a compressor sustainer, which I suppose technically it is. Graphic Fuzz, which does have compression on it. There's a rack-mounted two-channel compressor that they do, which they've done for ages.
Those are the things.
Soul Preacher, the Tone Corset.
The rack-mounted compressors are like $2,000 or something, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the main ones really are, yeah, probably the White Finger, the Tone Corset, which is new, the Soul Preacher, the Black Finger, and the Bass Preacher.
Tone Corset is such a bad name. I was just thinking about it as we were talking about it.
Doesn't make any sense.
Did we ever even talk about the Battalion? I don't think we did we?
I think
we mentioned it briefly.
I think we did mention it briefly,
They're bringing pedals out at such a rate that I can't even remember if we've talked about them like 2 weeks after they come out.
I tell you the other thing about Electro Harmonix is, you know, how forward-thinking did they have to be to ensure that they got EHX.com?
Yeah, yeah. They've had a really good website for ages.
Well, actually, what I think they've done is when they first registered EHX.com, they created a really good website, and that's still the website that they've got now.
But they do update it regularly. Like,
they do.
New stuff going on there all the time.
They do, and there's like a good little feed there, but, I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's starting to look a little bit dated, but it's all right. So, interested to hear one of those. I kind of feel like with the new Electro Harmonix pedal coming out every month, we could probably just afford to just buy the new one every month, because they're always like £40 or something.
I think these are a bit more than that. I think this is £80 or so.
Imagine having the entire Electro-Harmonix collection.
I mean, you just wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, you would.
What are you talking about? Of course not.
With all those Patreon sign-ups after this episode, I'm sure we could do it. So, patreon.com/guitar nerds.
There is so many pedals.
While I'm reading the next news item, why don't you count how many pedals they do?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, good. Matt Knight, do you want to tell us about the Old Blood Noise Endeavours, The Fault?
Yes, I do. And actually, maybe I'll be brief on this one because I got confirmation yesterday that they have sent us some pedals, so I have a feeling that this may be in the post.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, so basically a overdrive with an optional gain 2 that you can stack on top, so it's not like a 2-channel drive. I suppose maybe it is, but it's more like a single channel overdrive that you can then stack a second gain control onto the top. Active 3-band EQ, which is really nice. True bypass, standard 9-volt control, and I'd say maybe a little bit more. Well, this is the thing, because I want to hear it, because Old Blood Noise, I remember when I worked at Anderton's, I was saying to Lee and the other guys who do the purchasing, we're getting asked for this brand all the time, and they make some really far-out reverbs and delays, and then they come out with an overdrive, and I'm like, oh, that seems like fairly tame for them, but I've got a feeling like when we plug it in, it's probably going to do a bit of everything, and it's probably going to be pretty crazy.
Well, like you say, with that extra gain that you can add in on the top, it's probably like quite a high gain overdrive, and then there's more on there as well.
Yeah. I mean, these guys, the company, there was a little short documentary that they kind of done about loads of the other stuff that they do and kind of how they design pedals, and they are really into like odd sound design.
Yeah.
So I kind of think it's probably going to do a little bit more than kind of meets the eye.
Definitely, definitely. Talking about pedals that will probably do more than meets the eye, have you got some details on the Matthews Effects Chemist Atomic Modulator? Sounds like something right up your street. There couldn't be a more Matt Knight named pedal, I don't think.
Yeah, Matt, I wish I'd made it. I wish I had one. Yeah, I have been on the forum for this pedal on Facebook for the last kind of month or so. And there's about 20 memes a day that go up for people waiting for this particular pedal. I think the guy's really into kind of like making kind of far out like future guitar pedals. But I think he's also a really small operation. And basically, he's kind of just like always teasing people, I've got this thing coming out, which is good because it just constantly builds up like massive hype. But the Atomic Modulator is effectively a chorus and vibrato octave and a phaser all in one unit, so digital, I would imagine, 3 DSP settings that you can basically switch between, so you can have one on at any one time. So you've got chorus and vibrato, which I'd imagine is probably based off some sort of like CE1 style kind of design, but allows it to go completely kind of bonkers on the vibrato side. Octave gives you kind of more of the organ style thing, like we were talking about with the Walrus Audio Luminary, where you've got choice over plus or minus octaves, plus going into dry controls. And then you've got a really kind of crazy phaser. You've got basically there's 2 toggle switches that let you choose what algorithm is. There's basically 6 controls, and then you can choose which algorithm goes on the top row or the bottom row, so you get more instant control over everything. Plus you get an external expression pedal jack as well, so you can do kind of loads of stuff on the fly. But it looks like really like bonkers bit of kit.
Yeah, their stuff, from what I can gather, because I've not actually heard any of their stuff yet, but from what I can gather, it's always pretty out there.
Yeah, and I think he's just really good at kind of, I mean, he did the, what was it? The, like, utility box, which was the kind of stereo into mono box and stuff like that as well. And I think he's just, like, he's one of those kind of solid manufacturers that's got a really strong following, but you don't necessarily see them in, like, a ton of stores just yet.
Yeah, they're sort of direct to the customer, aren't they? So,
yeah.
Jay Cross, give us the rundown, the pun down, the fun down on how many Electro-Harmonix pedals there are.
So I sort of tried to skip over the bits and pieces that aren't pedals.
Yep.
So they do a pedal bag and the foot switches and stuff like that. 143. current products. And the thing that surprised me more than anything, they make speakers.
Really?
Did you know that?
No, I did not know.
Oh,
that.
I just saw that when I was scrolling through.
I had no idea they made speakers. And although I have just Googled 12TS16, which I assume is their 16-ohm 12-inch speaker. And
what if it's the 16-inch 12-ohm speaker?
Oh, maybe you're right, actually. Maybe that's why they're making them.
Yeah, yeah.
Mike Matthews has got a...
He's got a
16-inch amp.
He's got what?
A 16-inch amplifier. And he needed a 12-ohm... very weird. Very, very weird. I've never seen them before, and there's none coming up on Google Shopping.
So what was it, 143 pedals?
Something like that. I might have double counted.
Ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. Talking about pedals, let's do one last news item, because it is actually fairly important, and I forgot that we completely skipped over this. Wampler have just announced the Ethereal Reverb and Delay.
They have, and I tell you what, this looks like the sort of pedal for people who really like the sounds of big, weird delay pedals, but don't have the stuff upstairs to make them work.
The sort of brain power.
As in people like me.
Yeah, exactly. You've got nothing upstairs.
As much as I love the sound of a Strymon Big Sky or a Strymon Timeline, there's just no way I'd ever buy one.
Yeah.
There's too much, and it's not really the money. That's sort of by the by. There's just too much going on with them. I'm not, you know, I'll leave those for the Matt Knights of this world. And this looks fantastic. I mean, it's in everybody's favourite shade of sky blue. I'm not quite sure what.
It's kind of green, isn't it?
But it's, you know, it's that real nice big sky blue.
Okay, I see what you're doing there, but yeah, it's actually a bit more green.
I don't think so. I think that's like a...
Sky
blue.
No, it's green.
Okay, well, agree to disagree. In fact, there's a green LED. Look at that. That's green. This is...
Matt Knight, you've got the deciding vote, green or blue.
I thought it was seafoam green, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Whose side are you on, honestly?
Winner, chicken
honestly,
dinner.
Honestly, anyway.
That's why I'm the winner, because you can't eat the chicken dinner.
People can decide. Anyway, the whole point of this is it's to give those really nice, long ambient delays without having to go down the route of extreme processing and micro-tuning each individual. It's you plug it in and you twiddle your knobs and you go, that sounds good, I'll use that.
Good.
And sounds fantastic. Getting some great reviews. It's got a neat little extra kind of weird dip switch on there. It's not really a switch, it's like a...
It is like a mini switch.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Which just allows you to switch between subdivisions.
It actually adds in a second delay.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. So it's actually, they're the subdivisions for the second delay.
Right.
So you've got delay, feedback and tone like a normal one, mix in how much reverb and delay you want with the delay, reverb and mix, and then the button in the middle adds in a second delay in time with however you've set the delay control on the front, and then you pick which subdivision you want that delay to be.
How about that?
There we go. So even the more basic one has completely bamboozled you.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. Completely. And you've got a nice little... in fact, I don't know why it's there, because obviously you'd always leave it on the trails control.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. There's a... again, not that I seem to be doing this every week, not that I would recommend you go and listen to another guitar podcast.
Definitely do not.
I was listening to the Wampy podcast this week, and they were talking about it, and Brian seems very excited about this one. Brian gets very excited about a lot of stuff.
That's true. Don't listen to any other guitar podcast. What you should do is download it.
Yes.
Then put your phone in the bin and set the bin on fire and throw it into the sea. and then move to a different country.
How are they going to listen to this podcast?
They're buying a new phone.
Right, okay, but don't accidentally subscribe to...
If you've accidentally subscribed to another guitar podcast, the only way to unsubscribe, put your phone in the bin, set it on fire, throw it in the sea, and move to a different country, buy a new phone, and only subscribe to Guitar Nerds.
The problem with that, though, is generally... If you have got an iPhone, for example...
You've made the first mistake there.
If you've got an iPhone, it will re-download everything that you'd already downloaded.
No, you've made a big mistake. OnePlus for the win, yeah?
I mean, you say that, but I was sending you text messages today and you weren't receiving them.
Yeah, that's because you've got a pony iPhone, mate.
Oh, okay, fine.
Anyway, we should dive headfirst into a bin, then into the sea, and moved to a country called...
Questonione.
Very good. Very good. I really hope Joe's back next week.
Listen, I don't like being put on this spot. I think you should do it.
Questions.
See how wet that sounded?
Questions.
See, it's bad. And I don't like the fact that...
Questions.
No, you've got to use the mic. You've got to get closer.
Questions.
He's rubbish.
Yeah, he's really good at it.
I know.
Pains me so much to admit that he's good at something.
I know.
If only he was good at turning up for the podcast, that'd be something good, wouldn't it? First question. Let's do... this is one for Jay. Yeah, actually, Jay, you answered this on the forum, but I think it'd be good to... do it on the podcast so the wider Guitar Nerds audience can hear it. John says, Jay Cross, with your new Fendery Intel, can you let us know when we're going to hear a head version of, or when we're going to get a head version of the Blues Junior? The World and their mum have done a Lunchbox amp. Surprised the Big F haven't risen to it. Now, there's all sorts of speculation on the forum as to why this wasn't a thing, but you actually, for once, we actually know the truth.
Yes, so I don't think I asked this on my first day, but it might have been my second day. And apparently the reason for it is the chassis, the mounting chassis of the Blues Junior is too big, goes down too low for it to fit into a head size cabinet. So the cabinet for the head would have to be so large that
You might as well just have the combo.
It just doesn't make sense. Apparently, that's why.
Okay.
I hope I'm not giving away any company secrets there.
Inside secrets.
No, but I assume if you'd ever looked at the... Because once I was told that, I then went and looked at a Blues Junior and I went, oh, that does... Yeah, it does come down quite a way. So, apparently, that's why.
Interesting. Talking about amps, Mark says, you've got 1,400... I assume it's pounds, or it could be dollars, to spend
Didn't
on a...
Did I answer this last week?
I don't think so.
Have it on the thing?
I think I put it in the podcast email last week.
Did we just not answer it?
We didn't get
around
to
it. Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure we didn't answer it.
Okay. Well, let's answer it again. And if we did answer it last week, let's compare and contrast our answers from last week.
Blake says, Martin or Taylor? Man, what would you go for?
I was thinking about this. This is really tricky because I am not a massive acoustic player, but obviously sold a fair few in my time. And I always liked Taylors for the kind of like modern sound they had. Like every time you play a Taylor, you're like you sort of know it's going to sound good. You're like, yeah, it's just a Taylor. And there it is. And my favourite one was actually the 8-string baritone.
Oh, that was such a weird guitar.
Because it was the D and the G string were doubled up and everything else was just standard. And that guitar sounded incredible.
It really did sound fantastic.
Some of the more expensive ones, they sound great, but they almost sound like... They sound... Clinical's maybe not the right word, but...
Too good.
They're so consistent. They are almost too good. Where, like, some of the Martins, they have much more of that kind of vintage, kind of that history about them. And I still think the best one I've heard, and if I was going to go and buy an acoustic for that sort of money, I'd probably buy a D18.
Yeah.
Because the modern D18s, they sound great. I remember Dan Grace bought one, and when he bought his, it sounded amazing. And for me, just always... a consistently great guitar, and it's great plugged in as well. But yeah, so I'd probably say Martin's. I think they make more guitars I'd probably be interested in, like tonal wise. All the Taylors have their own kind of characteristics, but I'm always, they never attract them as much as a kind of like vintage looking Martin.
Jay Cross.
So I've got a Taylor.
Yes, we all know about this guitar.
I've got a Taylor, but, I love a story, and I've been to the Martin.
We never could have told that you like a story.
I like a
long-winded,
a long-winded,
possibly nonsensical, with no real end.
Yes.
Yeah, we know.
Okay.
Tell us the story about the Martin Factory.
No, I wasn't going to go into it. I like a story, and I've been to the Martin Factory, and now that I've been to the factory and seen them do everything and wandered around their museum, I just think they're such a fantastic company. I think it's really interesting, and it's really cool. I really like it. And, you know, I know that you shouldn't judge a guitar off of that. I think both those companies are really good, and I think they both make really great guitars. I think probably I would probably say that the Taylors that I've played are maybe... I think they probably are a bit more consistent than the Martins, but I think when you play a good Martin, it really is like unlike anything else. I would never consider myself an authority on this because I'm not a huge fan of acoustic guitars, but I all the Martins that I've played are really good. But when it comes to the cheaper ones, I think it's very difficult to see a clear winner. I think they both make some great stuff. I hate to be offensive here, but I think if you're thinking about the two, go to a store and try a couple of each and pick whichever one you like the feel of.
I really, really want to like Martin acoustic guitars. Same with Gibson. I really want to like Martin and Gibson acoustic guitars because obviously, you know, they've got the heritage and you see pictures of like Bob Dylan playing one and, you know, they look fantastic, real vintage vibe. I can't get on with them at all. Like, as soon as I pick up a Taylor, I'm like, this sounds incredible. And it is very much like Matt was describing. They almost sound too good.
Yeah.
And that's normally not what I'd look for in an electric guitar. You know, give me a high-end Ibanez or something, and I'm like, this just kind of... just get me a Les Paul Junior straight away.
Yeah, P90.
Something yeah. like a little bit more rock and roll, a little bit more kind of bodged together.
Yeah.
But on acoustics, I'm totally the other way around. I really, really want to love like a nice J45 or on, you know, Martin, just any Martin's guitar. But then I pick up a Taylor and I'm like, this is just better. Like, I find acoustics difficult to play at the best of times. And Taylors I just don't find difficult to play. They're set up so nicely. The quality of the woods is impeccable. Like... But
the design as well. I mean, that's the thing you've got to remember about Taylor is that they're a company that's actually only like 40 years old.
Yeah, completely.
And I mean, things like the fact that you can basically take the neck off.
Yeah.
Like with ease, you can basically just unscrew something, take the neck off, adjust it. Like for a setup, like they've thought about everything.
Yeah. Really. And, you know, there's other things that I think is really cool about them in terms of what they're doing with wood preservation and stuff like that. But yeah, I just think they're really well-built guitars, and that they have a similar feel to, or I guess they're equivalent in the electro world is something like, you know, PRS, which could be seen as like a bit soulless, I guess. But for me on acoustics, I just kind of want something that's easy to play and sounds really good, and don't get that from Martin or Gibson.
They do actually have one of the best pickup systems because they don't rely on a piezo, because that's the thing. D18 relies on the like the Aura imaging system, which models other acoustic body sizes and microphones, where the Taylor system obviously works on those kind of body points, and it's got those pads on the inside.
It's got like crystals in it or something, doesn't it?
There is some sort of really weird technology, but they sound so consistent plugged in. So if you're after an acoustic, for me, like if I was going to say, if someone said, okay, you need an acoustic, you've got to plug it in all the time, Taylors have the best, most consistent sound.
Definitely.
And they rather than that kind of bright, twangy sound you get from the bridge, but the under saddle stuff.
Yeah. So there we go. We're kind of all over the place on that topic. I think, you know, from you guys.
Go to a shop and try a couple.
Completely. Yeah, go and find your fit, I guess. With that, we are at the end of this podcast. We're going to go and record another 30 minutes over at patreon.com/guitarnerds. This week, instead of actually doing a poll in the forum, I've taken a question from Michael, which was, following on from the podcast, I dug out my Digitech Crossroads pedal. Joe Bratton described this as the worst pedal ever. Anyone got any ridiculous signature pedals? So I thought what we could actually discuss, which is taking the topic slightly further, is the worst signature products.
Okay.
I think that would be something that we've probably, you know, we worked in guitar shops for a long time. We've seen some utter guff that's had someone's name slapped on it. I think, you know, we could probably do half an hour on the Gibson Sully Erna Les Paul if we were pushed.
That is a great guitar.
It's a good little Erna, that one.
Lovely little Erna, bit of Will Bunsen.
That is a great guitar. I will hear no I knew you were going to bring up the Sully Erna.
We can argue this further over on Patreon. Patreon.com/Guitar Nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 gets you the regular podcast episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you the episode ad-free and early and an extra half an hour. Plus, you also get access to the full back catalogue of Patreon stuff, including all the interviews that Matt does and the mini-series Joe Branton's Rant On, where Branton talks about things that he hates for 25 minutes to half an hour. And upcoming, we've got it in the schedule now, the Gear of Yesteryear, where we talk about previous gear from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s and see what people were awarding Gear of the Year around that time. We talk about it. And our $10 tier, you get your name read out on the regular podcast like these people.
Sully Erna song. Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Carlos Mancha, Andrew Macro, Mark Cross, JD Shaw, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anstis, Moo Gravett, Colin. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Colin Anderson.
There we go. Very, very good.
What was that?
It was Hulk Hogan's theme tune, Real American.
Oh, it was really slow.
No, it was good. You know, just it's the Doom version.
Okay.
You could find more. Where can people find more? I've completely forgotten the end of the podcast now. I was thinking about Hulk Hogan and...
At Bo Banton.
I was thinking about 22-inch pythons.
Excuse me.
At Bo Banton on Instagram is where you can find our missing co-host, Joe Branton. He has no other official accounts on the internet, so just follow at Bo Banton. If you want to follow us, best way actually is go to Facebook, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, where you can get involved with the show, send in questions, chat to other Guitar Nerds listeners. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, and do go to YouTube, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos, because like I said, I just put up a cool video about 8 SG facts you probably didn't know, and there's new pedal of the week's coming. We're also doing our first kind of travel log episode in the next couple of weeks, where we're going to be going to a... doing a bit of travelling. Let's just put it that way. We're going
Are we?
To... Yeah, I'm doing it. Travelling to an event, and I'm going to film the whole journey and do all that.
Oh, that thing.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Mysterious. That'll be up on the YouTube channel soon. Thanks very much for listening, and we will speak to you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.